Hello, my name is Leroy Chatfield, director of the Farm Worker Movement Documentation Project. This program is another in a series of oral history interviews for the project entitled, Who Was Jim Drake? Today is Thursday, February the 12th, 2009. My interview guests today are Gilbert Padilla, one of the founders of the Farm Worker Movement, who served as a vice president for the United Farm Workers for 15 years. And also with us is attorney Yolanda Barrera, who as a 15-year-old girl worked for Jim Drake in the Farm Worker Association office in Porterville, California in 1965. Today's interview will be published in the oral history section of the website of the Farm Worker Movement Documentation Project and may be found at www.farmworkermovement.us. First, I want to thank our guests for their participation in today's oral history interview about Jim Drake. And to begin the interview, I ask each of our guests to give us their name, tell us a little bit about who they are and what they do. Gilbert Padilla, let us begin with you.
Well, my name is Gilbert Padilla. Hello?
Hello, go ahead.
I'm Gilbert Padilla. I worked in community most of my life, first with the community service organization back in the 50s, and then became a founder of the National Farm Work Association in 1962, September 1962, and worked with the National Farm Work Association until it became the UFW in 1966, and I was the vice president then. But in 1973, when we became a bona fide union of the FFL-CIO, I became the secretary treasurer, which made me the second in command of the union. And worked there until 1981, and I retired from the union. Came here to Fresno, working community, and I'm now retired and enjoying life.
Thank you. Yolanda, you're next.
Hello, my name is Yolanda Barrera. I was born in Texas, grew up in Porterville, California. I lived in Porterville basically until 1969, and then went on to college, to university, law school. I am now a federal criminal defense attorney and have been for the last 28 years. My office is in Monrovia, California.
Thank you. My next question addressed to each of our guests is this. Tell us when and under what circumstances you first met Jim Drake, and what were your first impressions? Yolanda Barrera, let us begin with you.
Well, I first met Jim Drake actually in it was either 63 or 64. I know by 1964 I was working for him, and I was not 14 years old. I was 13 years old at the time. And the way that I met him was that Jim Drake had gone to Porterville, California to talk to some of the community members about organizing a group to attempt to get some self-help housing. And what that was basically that all of the members of the group would help each other to build new homes. And my parents had responded to a flyer that they had seen, and they were very impressed with Jim Drake. And so they took me along, because my parents always took me along whenever someone didn't speak Spanish and or when they were nervous with a new individual. And so anywhere my parents went, I went. The group at the time that got together were my parents, my uncles, my other relatives, and other friends in the area. And they started meeting and talking about building these homes. Ultimately, that did not come about. And the reason, as I recall, was there were certain federal regulations that required that the individuals either not own property or that they had to be living in a city which could not have over, I think it was 5,000 people in the city already. And there was also a requirement that all of them had to be American citizens. Although my parents and my uncles were all citizens, they owned property. It wasn't worth much, but they did own a house. And some of the other individuals were not citizens. So the group was going to disband. And at that point, Jim Drake suggested that maybe since they were already together, already knew each other, had already been meeting, maybe what they should do is stay together and form a farm workers organization. So that's what they did. They all agreed to stay together. And there was an office off of Olive Street in Porterville. And this was the migrant ministry office. And so Jim Drake suggested that they could do various things to help this farm workers organization. And that's when I started working for, I don't know if I was paid by the migrant ministry or if actually Jim Drake was paying me. I was paid minimum wage. I worked 2 hours after school, and I basically was running that small office. I was there to collect the dues of the members. I would pump gas. I would take orders for whatever the members wanted to order, like cans of oil, tires, anything having to do with the car.
Yolanda?
Yes.
What were your first impressions of Jim Drake?
My first impressions of Jim Drake were that he was this gentle giant. He was an individual who seemed to care a lot for the people, everyone that he came in contact with. He was quiet. I was very impressed with the way he went about organizing the small group that we were in contact with. And it was confusing for me at the time because I was 13 years old. I had never known anyone like Jim Drake before. My contact with adults were my relatives and other Mexican Americans or Mexicans, and I didn't think that an Anglo would care about what Mexicans were going through. Jim Drake was someone who stood basically head and shoulders above everyone else by his appearance. But
Yolanda?
Yes.
When you say head and shoulders above everyone else, are you also referring to his size?
That's what I'm saying. Not just his size, but the way he acted, the way he showed how much he cared. And that was confusing at that time because I think not just for myself, not just for a 13-year-old, but I think for the adults as well, because they couldn't figure out why someone like Jim Drake would want to be helping them. What was the motive? He was someone who was educated. He was someone who didn't have to be in the homes of the farm workers. He was someone who everyone felt could have, it could be in a much better area than Porterville. Didn't have to be working with farm workers, but there he was. There he was eating the same food, staying with them wherever they were. And it was kind of confusing for the people that with whom he was working. But in time, I think what ended up happening because of his actions, because of his example, he was able to show with his conduct that this is what you should be doing in life, helping others. And those people that he touched, my family, my uncles, my cousins, our friends, all of them ended up becoming the kinds of individuals who gave of themselves and gave to the community. And I think it was all definitely in part because of the example that Jim Drake gave them.
Good. Thank you. Gilbert?
Yes?
What about you?
I met Jim Drake January of 65. I got a call from him that he wanted to come to visit me. I was living in Hanford at the time. I was working in the fields, working with tying vines. And he asked me what I was doing. I told him I was working with the National Farm Workers Association. I was out there in the field gathering names and making members. He told me that he wanted to come and talk to me. So he came. I have known that Jim was there because I knew that he worked for the California Migrant Ministry. And I had never met him, so he came to my house. And he came, a very gentle human being. He told me the story of the project that he had in Porterville. He told me that he needed some help doing what the head of committee or had an organization called Farm Workers Organization, and that he needed help, somebody to come in and help him because of the language barrier and membership was growing and needed help, and asked me if I would be interested in coming to help him, and I did. And my impression on him was he's a very gentle man. He didn't use words that weren't, didn't make any sense. I mean, he chose his words. He didn't stay long. He spoke very softly. And I went to Porterville and had the little office in back of a barber shop, a small little office, and I started working with him.
Mm-hmm.
He was very cautious. I started working with a group. That's where I met Yolanda. She used to come in the afternoons. And I met her parents, and her parents very much involved. I remember we had a committee already set up, a little organization. The president was a guy, a fellow by the name of Esquivel. I don't remember all of them that they were involved in it, but I know the Barrera was in Zamora and some of the people that are, they were workers. And told me, well, your role is to help me organize a union. And what he did is that he was doing, he got this tank, galvanized tank, and filled it up with gas. And he would sell the gasoline to the members at cost. And there's a lot of stuff like a little co-op type. And my first impression of the project was, told him that this what you're doing here, you're building a union, and this thing's got to grow. And he said, well, I'm also working in the labor camps because the California Migrant Ministry's history was working in labor camps with the migrants. And some weeks later, I went with the other co-worker, Reverend Dave Havens, to the labor camp in Woodville. And when I came back from Woodville, I told Jim, you know, we have to do something about the labor camp. It's a tin shack. People put old mattresses and rags on top of the roof to keep cool. It was in the summer. In the summer, I saw all those things. They had the bathrooms were for both female and male. And when family used to take their wives to use the bathroom, he had to stand outside the door and. I said, it's horrible. We have to deal with this. And we talk about that. And he says, well, your job is to organize more people here. And I told him, you know, we have to join them into a bigger group. And He was very nervous about that. And in May, I got it there in January. In May, they raised the rents at the labor camp.
They raised the rents from what to what?
It was like, it was shacks, and they raised the rents on the pin shacks from, I forget, but I think I gave them like a $5 rent increase. And this is where I first, known Jim was a very smart human being, you know, very smart dude. I told him, I said, look, the workers came to see me and they're raising the rent and we had to do something, we had to strike them or something. And he says, well, let me check it out. And he went out to Visalia to check out the labor camp, and he came back with a big report. Did a lot of research. And he says, you know, this labor camp, these pin shacks, were built during the Depression, during the Okie migration for 10 years. And then after that, they were supposed to be destroyed. Well, what happened is that those tin shacks didn't get destroyed. The growers took it over to the labor camp, and the growers ran it for a period of time. And then the growers, they couldn't hack that, so then the county housing authority took it over. And he said, under the law here, he brought out some, he talked to some attorneys, and he says, they can't raise rent on a condemned dwelling. And that's what started the rent strike. And I said, well, we have to strike them, and we have to do a strike. So his idea was, well, we have to get some people and some clergy involved in taking the rent and put a trust fund and put the money there. But before that, we went to talk to the housing authority. There was the general manager of the house, of the two camps, one in Farmersville and the other one in Woodville. Jim Stein was the general manager. We talked to him, and he said, "Well, this camps were here for the 30s, right?" And he did all the work as far as finding what the secret censor was about the labor camp, and we brought in an attorney, and he said, we met and said, you know what, let's have a rent strike. And I went to the camp and got the people and had a rent strike. My impression of him, and not only when I first met him, but throughout my friendship with him, was that I thought that one of the smartest guys in the union. He was very, very dedicated, very quiet. He never was a bragger about anything, but he did a lot.
Okay.
Not only that, I'm going to do one more. When we did the strike, then he decided that we should do a march. And he was always concerned about having a lot of problems and didn't know how to do things. So he brought in some people from SNCC, some of the people from L.A. So we organized a strike from the labor camp to the housing authority. And he's the one that brought in these trained organizers for marches and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
My impression with him was very, always has been very positive.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go back to Porterville and the office. And Yolanda, you were telling us some of the kinds of work that you did working in the office. Could you run down that list again and how that impacted the members, or what services you provided that they really needed or wanted or took advantage of?
Well, I did minor typing, which was kind of a little joke between David Havens, Jim Drake, and I, because I couldn't type. But they would actually handwrite little letters. They would leave them there for me, and when I showed up, I was supposed to type them, so I would type with two fingers. And I suspect now, and of course I suspected many years after that, that they were just leaving those things for me so that I would feel useful. But I doubt that they really needed that kind of help. Mostly my job, I think, was to be available for the members. There were certain hours that I was there. I would, the members would come in and pay their dues. They would come in for gas. I had the keys for the huge tank that was in the backyard, and I would be the one to go over there and pump the gas for them, take orders for various automotive type of items, as I mentioned, oil, tires, other things like that. I had a little booklet that I would provide to them. And other than that, it was more of a communication center. Many of the members would show up to chat with each other. It was a place for them to meet. That is where the meetings were held. It was a very small group when we first started out, but it started getting larger and larger. And Gilbert mentioned somebody named Esquivel was the president. Actually, my father was a president. His name's Jesus Marin Barrera. A lot of the people from Woodville Labor Camp, which Gilbert just mentioned, were members of the Farm Workers Organization. Ernesto Loredo, for example. He, along with several of his relatives, were spearheading the wrench strike in Woodville. The Espinosa family, there were several brothers that also spearheaded it, and they were members. And these are the individuals, basically, who would be coming into the office. Sometimes they needed help from me, translating letters, for example, helping them, making phone calls, things like that. In general, that's basically what I was doing in the office.
How much were the dues?
I don't remember. I have a vague recollection that that it was like $1.50, but I'm not sure if that's accurate. Maybe Gilbert remembers that.
Gilbert?
Were $1.50, and then raised it to $2.
And what did the dues pay for?
Well, it was a fund that was hit there to buy the more gas and just having a fund. And this is one of the things that we had talked about, is what are you going to do with this money, you know, because what are you going to do, you know, pay the rent and do things, you know, buy material for the office.
Mm-hmm. And what is the dues, $1.50 and then later to $2, that was per month?
Yeah, per month.
Per month, uh-huh. And Yolanda, how many people do you remember were paying dues, do you think?
I recall that there were about 20 people at one point. We started out with 10 people. That was the self-help group. And then it grew to about 20 people. And then as time went on, the group started getting larger and larger. By the time we get to, for example, like 1966, which is when the marchers came through Porterville on their way to Sacramento, the group was very large by then. It's difficult for me to even guess at how many people, but I know that we did not fit in the office. So a lot of those meetings were being held like in backyards, for example, primarily at my father's house. So it would be very difficult for me to even venture a guess as to how many families were actually members by then. If I was pressed on it, I'd probably say that there were, at least 40 families that were members.
Mm-hmm. And the meetings that took place, this is back in 64 and 1965, the meetings that took place in the office, how often were those meetings?
I'm not certain, but I believe the official meetings, the meetings of the farm worker organization, I believe those were once a month, but there were many other meetings. They were impromptu meetings, like issues would come up, things would come up where the men wanted to discuss something that was going on. And those would be smaller groups, like it might be five men getting together and they would meet. And those meetings were fairly frequent. I would say that those meetings were at least once a week.
And what was the role of Jim Drake, if any, in those meetings?
Jim Drake did not really get involved in those meetings. The president of the group and the various members were the ones that were calling the meetings. Jim Drake's role, as I saw it, was basically to facilitate the meetings. In other words, he was the one running the office. He was the one working with the members. He was more like a background person, where I think he was so good at making it appear as if these farm workers who had joined together. He wanted to make sure that they had the facilities to be able to get organized and to work together, rather than them feeling that there was someone there making them do things, or guiding them or leading them. He actually was leading and guiding, but with an invisible hand is what he was doing. And in fact, he's the one that eventually suggested to the workers that since they were already organized, they were already they had already gotten to know each other, and he thought that maybe they would be interested in meeting a man named Cesar Chavez, who had a group similar to theirs, and that they had mutual interests, and perhaps that they should meet with him and talk to him and see if they wanted to join.
Mm-hmm. Gilbert?
Yeah.
What was Jim's role when you were there in 1965? How did you see the work that Jim did? What was his role?
His role was there to see that the thing was functioning. He didn't really get involved in the meetings. When I got there in January of 65, I would have the meetings and the committee would have it. You're right, Yolanda. Marin was the president.
Yeah.
So, right. And he would stay in the backyard. He would not get involved in. He was a facilitator. He didn't get involved in asking them what to do. We were doing the decisions. I was helping them make the decisions, like the rent strike, for example, and the other strike. He wasn't buying very much. He got involved in the technical part of the rent strike, like getting the trust fund and talking to the housing authority and talking to the press and stuff like that. But otherwise, I was doing most of the work and the committee.
Mm-hmm.
They're in the background. So did Dave Havens, the world reverend at the time. You know, he stayed on the side,
mm-hmm.
raising money for us. I guess.
When you say that on the rent strike, that Jim Drake brought in or recruited some outside people to help. You mentioned SNCC. Is that Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee that you're referring to, or something else?
No, that's the one I'm referring to.
Okay.
Some of the people from that organization had been down in the South doing marches, and they were very trained and veterans of marches, and know how to handle marches and how to handle situations. And
so they had worked in the civil rights movement in the South.
Yeah, they're all civil rights.
Uh huh. Mm-hmm.
And they came, when they first came, we got the committee when we were going to march and tell us how to handle the march, how to handle if we were going to get harassments and the police and how to handle with the police and how to do all these sort of things.
There was about
five or six of them that came.
Mm-hmm. Had there ever been a farm worker march in the Porterville area up to this time?
No. We were the first ones.
Yolanda? Is,
yeah,
is
that's
that
correct. There had never been anything like this before. And, you know, for a while after that, I worked in Woodville Labor Camp as a community worker. And that was one of the things that the people there would tell me. I was trying to encourage them to join the labor strike and to join the farm workers union. And that's one of the things that the people would say, some of the older people, they would say, this isn't going to work. It's been tried before. And I'd say, you know, I'm 14 years old, 15 years old. I'm saying, when did this not work? And the old timers would tell me, oh, I remember back in whenever. And they all have these stories to tell me of when farm workers had tried to organize and they had always been crushed. And there had never been a march. There had never really been an organization. Individuals had tried to make things better, and they basically had always been crushed, destroyed. And then, of course, their lives have been even more miserable than before. So this was it. This was the very first time. And to my knowledge, even now, I believe that it is the first successful rent strike.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, how large was the rent strike? How large was the march? Where did it go? March from where to where?
We started marching from the labor camp of Farmersville. The count, I don't know, 100 or so, but that was all the workers and the people from the labor camps were marching. That probably was the first march we ever had. Remember, we marched from Farmersville all the way up to some church, and we stopped at some church.
Are you talking about a mile or 2 miles?
Oh,
or?
Jesus, I don't remember. Maybe 5 miles, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was about 5, I'm pretty sure.
Or more, uh-huh. Because it was from, we started at Farmersville. Mm-hmm. Labor camp be farmers. There were two labor camps that we had on strike. The one in Woodville, the one in Farmersville. And from there we marched we stopped at some church there to rest, and then we went into picket, demonstrate in front of the housing authority, and then from there we went into Mooney Park.
Mooney Park?
Was
yes.
It Mooney Park?
Yes.
Some
Mooney.
Park.
Mm-hmm.
And we had lunch, or we had some food there.
And so
that was, and you're right, Yolanda's right. That was the first rent strike and the most successful rent strike in the history of California, because we won. The workers won.
What was the victory?
The victory was that they tore up the tin shacks and they built good homes. They tore up all those tin shacks, and we built good homes. And it's nice park now. The labor camps are really nice. In the process of doing all this, this is where Jim Drake came in a lot. We brought in a lot of legislators to get the camp. We had a lot of publicity. We had a lot of, I remember bringing in, Secretary of Labor, I remember. We brought him in to look at the labor camp in there. And we went to the legislature. We brought some politicians. I don't recall all the politicians we brought. I think we shamed the housing authority to the point where they threw their hands up in the air, and they built homes, and that was a victory.
How large was the labor camp? How many shacks did it have?
I think on the first shack, I think it was 169, Yolanda?
Sounds right.
169 yeah. Families, I think it was.
And you know, Gilbert is actually being very humble about his participation in this rent strike, but it was, I mean, his participation here was just huge. And what they gained was just tremendous in two respects. I mean, one is you really had to have been in those tin shacks to recognize what a victory this was, because I had a lot of friends living there. In the summer, in that area, it gets extremely hot. I mean, this is like desert country. it gets to like 110, 115 degrees, and the people, it's impossible to stay inside, so you have to be outside. In the winter, it gets below freezing in that area. It typically is around like 28 to 30 degrees, and they're freezing in there. These, when we're saying tin shacks, that's exactly what we're talking about. We're talking of aluminum walls, aluminum roof. It was just a horrible place to live. No bathrooms inside. You had to walk a ways. You had to walk a ways to go get water. It was just it was worse than any ghetto, than any barrio, than any place else that I had ever seen, even including other labor camps. And so to see the difference from going from there to the new housing that was built, it was not just better living conditions, but it was also this great moral victory. All the people who participated in that were so joyous that they had been able to accomplish something that nobody else had ever been able to do. And that impacted a great deal on the people who participated and were the leaders of that rent strike. And all of them basically went on to do wonderful things in the future.
Mm-hmm. Could we come up with some names of people that formed the Farm Workers Association in Porterville, the names of the families, the names of people that you can remember? Yolanda, let's start with you.
Well, of course, my father and my mother, Jesus Marin Barrera and Amelia Barrera, my uncle, Jose Raul Barrera, and his wife, Margarita Barrera, my other uncle, Horacio Garza, and his wife, Maria Garza, my padrino, my godfather, Sebastian Zamora. There was Ernesto Loredo, who is also my padrino. Pablo Espinosa, who is also my padrino. all of his brothers, Candido Espinosa. And he had another brother whose name I can't recall right now. Then there were a lot of their relatives that were involved. Abel Salazar, and I can't recall the names of the others, but there were quite a few because they were a very, very large family. All of those were our individuals who also participated in the rent strike.
In addition to Paulo and Candido, and the other fellow was named Domingo, and they were very much involved in the rent strike, and also were all members in the labor camp, like Melquez Ramirez was there, and Señor Cortez, and the Champions, and what was his name? The first name, Champion, it was a very family. It's all the cousins of the Spinozas.
Yeah.
The Champion was a huge family.
Yes.
Do you remember the name?
I don't remember their first name, but I do remember the Champions. I mean, I remember the daughter. Her name was Gracie Champion. But, yes, a very large family. And there were also Juvencio and Mercedes Serna. They were also involved.
Abel Sanchez was there. Yeah, you mentioned him.
And the leadership, there was Gilbert Padilla, and there was Reverend David Havens. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And Jim Drake.
Right.
And who else at that level of participation? In other words, not farm workers, but people who were supporting.
Chris Hartmeyer from the California Migrant Ministry was very much involved in helping us. He was part of the Migrant Ministry, California Migrant Ministry. Let's see. So,
there was somebody else. I don't know, Gilbert, if you remember him. There was a VISTA volunteer who worked in the office, a young man. who used to ride around in his motorcycle, and he was always there to help, but I can't remember his name anymore.
Valentin?
No, he was white. I just
oh
can't
yeah
remember.
Yeah. He came out of the Vista.
Yes.
Yeah, his name was Ron. Ron Joplin, I think it was. He came to help there. He was a Vista.
Okay. What I'd like to do now.
Let me make a point here when you talk about leadership.
Go ahead.
You know, like Yolanda was mentioning earlier, people were scared and a little pessimistic about the history, you know, eventually, they get more involved. Huh? Leaders that came out of that organization, like Pablo Espinosa and Laredo. Laredo came out of that labor camp. And I can tell you, Laredo and Pablo were very scared. They were very nervous about it. They were afraid of the cops. They were afraid of being evicted. There was a whole thing about a lot of fear. Out of that came Pablo working with community and eventually, Pablo worked with the United Farm Workers Union, went on the boycott, became a negotiator, and became a radio announcer, and worked with the American Friends Service Committee, became a leader in his own right. Laredo also became involved out of that labor camp, working with community, hired by the American Friends Service Committee, had an organization, and for a long time had a housing, learned a lot about rent strikes and so on and so forth. They said it was some kind of a rent strike union or rentals organization. It trained a lot of people in Porterville and in the Tulare County. Became a known leader and later on had a business of his own. So a lot of them came out of there being successful.
So they learned this by participating in the activities of the Farm Worker Association in Porterville.
That's correct. I got to say. And then the Espinosa brothers, Domingo and Candido, were working at the J.D. Martin Ranch. And most of the camp, Abel and the champions, were all working at the J.D. Martin's ranch called Rancho Blanco. And they started that strike there. The first grape strike happened in the area of Delano and Porterville was started there at the Rancho Blanco. And that was initiated by the Espinosa brothers and the champions.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Jim very nervous about that. He told me, don't go strike. And so I told him, the guys were coming over telling me that they were unhappy with the conditions there. And they had separated the women and the men, and they had this foreman there that didn't have any toilets, and he was some sort of a maniac. And Jim had warned me, don't strike, because we've got this rent strike going on. The other half of people in that ranch came from Early Mart, and the majority of those were already members of the National Farm Workers Association. That's how that strike started. And I went there, and they pulled out 100%. These are the people from the rent strike.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what started the whole chain of events there on the grape strikes.
So one action leads to another action.
Yeah, because see, that finally happened there in Porterville. We had a successful because we pulled everybody out, and there was nobody working there. We used to go picket there. We didn't. We had a few pickets there, and we had it going.
Mm-hmm.
Out of that became the other strike in Delano, because Larry Young, as you recall, Larry Young was the organizer for the Agriculture's Organizing Committee,
mm-hmm.
And he heard about the strike of. We made the news when the strike came out in Porterville. We came out on the news, and Jim didn't want to make too much noise. He said, well, it was kind of a wildcat strike or something, and he didn't want to get involved too much in the strike. He wasn't ready for it. I was. I wanted to.
So Leroy,
when Larry Lyon heard about that, and then he was told, you know, this guy Gilbert, this guy from the farm workers organizing in Porterville are striking. But later on, in the years later, Larry confessed to me. He says, "You," he was mad at me. He says, "When it hadn't been for you, I wouldn't have pulled the people out." Because he thought that I was going to go strike over there in the, you know. So that's part of it. So the whole credit should go to that little group in the Lincoln.
Okay.
I might say how they got, how we joined the tour groups. I remember sitting down with Jim and saying, "What are we going to do now? This is getting bigger and bigger and bigger, you know." And we talk about, why don't we take this group to Delano. And so Cesar Chavez is organizing there. We already got an established organization over there. And why don't we move this membership over to Delano? He told me, "You think you can talk to the committee?" So I remember going up to see Marin Barrera and told him, "Look, this we should have two groups. We should have one group we can join over there." And I talked to the group. And then I took the group to Delano to meet with Cesar Chavez and say, "We want to, this group, if we could bring in this group over to Delano." It says it's just one group. And we took our funds we had in Porterville,
mm-hmm,
and paid the dues, and we started paying the dues into Delano. So we kind of, not destroyed, but disorganized the organization that we don't have, no longer have the farm worker organization.
What year was that?
The red strike started in May of 65, and Rancho Blanco, J.D. Martin Ranch started in August of 65, and then we started in August, we moved to Delano.
Yolanda? Gilbert was just telling us about the merger of the group from Porterville to the National Farm Workers Association and Cesar Chavez's group in Delano.
Yes.
What can you... from your perspective, Gilbert just told us how it happened. From your perspective, what was the feeling of the group in Porterville about doing that? Do you remember?
Well, what I recall is that Jim Drake talked to my father and some of the other individuals, the small group, and basically indicated to them that they were already organized in Porterville, but there was a larger group in Delano that was headed up by an individual by the name of Cesar Chavez, and that they should perhaps speak to him to see if they were interested in joining up with Cesar Chavez, and of course it would be their choice. So a particular day was set up for them to have a meeting with Cesar Chavez, and I'll tell you, that's a day I will never, ever forget, because that's the first day that I met Cesar Chavez, and I walked to the office, and he was just sitting there on the steps waiting for someone to come and open up the office. And the members came in and met with him, spoke to him, and then had their own separate meeting afterwards, and it was unanimous. They all wanted to join up with Cesar Chavez. And the very first time we went to Delano, we went as a group. We all followed each other. There were like 10 cars of individuals, and we were going over there to turn over the money. And they were doing fundraisers in Porterville also, so it wasn't just the dues. They would have dances, for example, and get money that way. And so they went to go turn over the money to the organization to officially be part of the group. And it was the best thing that they could have done.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And was this after the strike, the Delano grape strike had started, or was it still before that?
Oh, it was way before.
Way before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Is there anything else that either of you could say when you think about the work of Jim Drake in Porterville? Yolanda, let's start with you and see if you can sort of wrap up Jim's work in Porterville from your recollection.
You know, the one thing that that sticks in my mind about Jim Drake is it seemed to me like he made things happen and nobody even knew how he was doing it. And that's why originally I started off saying that he was this gentle giant. He was, and Gilbert has made reference also to the fact that he was always behind the scenes. And it was something that at the time that it was happening, things were just moving along and things were moving along smoothly. Nobody could really figure out how that was happening. And it's only until years later that you look back on it and you see why things were happening the way they were. And that was because of Jim Drake, because in a sense he was like the puppet master in a way, in a positive way, not in a negative way. He was there to make sure that things happened, and he did it by giving people what they wanted, what they needed in their lives, without them even realizing that that's what they needed and wanted. He made them work for it. And in doing so, he gave them grace and dignity, which no one had ever given them. And I think that that is the greatest legacy of Jim Drake, that instead of just helping one person or two people, he helped the whole community. And those individuals have now gone on, as Gilbert mentioned, to become leaders in various fields. You know, my father did the same thing. He went from being an uneducated farm worker, basically, to becoming a leader in the community. He went on to work as a manager of a credit union and doing community work and doing many wonderful things. And he belongs to a lot of organizations. And the question is, how did he get from point A to point B? And the answer is Jim Drake. And honestly, I think that's how I went from being the child of a farm worker, spending my summers picking apricots, picking pears, picking tomatoes and oranges, how I went from that point to being an attorney. The invisible hand of Jim Drake reaching out and letting us know how we were worth something and we were special and we could do it if we wanted to.
Good. Gilbert Padilla, what about your wrap-up for Jim Drake in Porterville?
I was very close to him. We were very good friends. I have very positive thoughts about Jim. He was very innovating, good human being. He never got credit for what he did. He never asked for it. From Porterville, who hasn't been for Jim, those things would have never happened because he came from Goshen. Remember, he was in Goshen first. To Porterville, if he hadn't started that little group, the rain strike would probably have never happened. The march would probably never happen. And as soon as the Porterville the strike started in Delano, he went there and worked until his death. I have a great respect for Jim Drake.
Good, thank you. Thank you, Yolanda Barrera. Thank you, Gilbert Padilla, for this interview about who was Jim Drake.